Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. As usual, I've got quite an assortment of different articles and messages from which to read. And as usual, I will start with one that has come through Sheldon Neidel this week, the weekly message from the Spiritual Hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. And it's one of these messages where I would be tempted to read it completely from start to beginning. There's very little, if any, that I can take out. And the only reason I edit the messages is so that I can get more in to the programme. But I will proceed, and Sheldon's people say that they expect shortly to see some much-needed changes to our world. And they say the present system in place, since just before the end of World War II, has been breaking apart at an accelerating rate over the course of the last 3 years. And holding this system in place increasingly taxes those told to enforce ever stricter rules and regulations. Slowly and secretly, a new system has begun to show its head, yet the moment for its full disclosure has not quite arrived. This is due in part to the nature of the old system, and in part to the way the still powerful American regime operates. Nevertheless, the days of the old system are numbered. Too many elements within it have unofficially jumped ship to the much longed for new financial and monetary system. Thus, our Earth allies are nearly ready to bring this new way into the light of a new day. The remaining key elements are a number of central banks, seemingly aligned with the American Federal Reserve Bank, but in truth pledged to a new and much broader-based currency exchange system. These shifting alliances have brought pressure upon the supposedly American-controlled IMF to prepare a whole set of secretly kept new policies on debt forgiveness, inter-central bank and intergovernmental loans, and a number of ongoing charitable projects. These are pure dynamite to the present Bretton Woods agreements that set up this system in late 1945. Recently promulgated charters designed to both modify and drastically alter it are in place and awaiting a special global conference to formally announce this and give it legal force. All this has been sniffed out in the past year by American intelligence, and their concerted efforts to gut it have failed. All that remains is the proper moment to leak it to the world. And this next sentence, I think, is very important to note. They say that this event depends on the intergovernmental effort to oust the present American regime, and this in turn is indirectly tied to the global release of the vast abundance program. They go on to say that whilst this progresses, a number of regional disputes have gained new impetus. Accordingly, our Galactic Federation diplomatic and liaison teams have been working tirelessly to alleviate these intensifying situations. As a result of their efforts is a special crisis team put together by our Earth allies, which possesses the will and the means to produce positive results. Hence, many things are happening behind the scenes that are designed to keep your global society's many flashpoints from spiralling out of control. It is necessary to maintain a certain level of international civility in order to manifest what is in the works. The illegal American regime is bent on fostering policies that encourage instability. Our Earth Allies Crisis Team and Galactic Federation diplomatic personnel are effectively diffusing these incendiary policy objectives. Our purpose is to move your society forward to its desired shift in consciousness. This is being aided by the work of heaven, which encourages the rapid move of everyone towards full consciousness. Again, I think that latter sentence was one of quite importance. The new monetary system that is in the works is to be a regionally powered one. A number of major currencies are to obtain equal status. once the abundance program is in full effect. The present system is to be drastically modified. Naturally, much of the new system is still under wraps. It is believed that a rapid transition can only happen if the full breadth of this four-stage procedure continues in its current covert mode, hence our present minimal disclosures. However, we can tell you that the overall concept is to move your society away from want and as swiftly as possible toward a full-out abundance. This undertaking in the latter stages is to include the deployment of our advanced technologies in order to free your global society from its almost total reliance upon energy resources extracted from Mother Earth. This technology uses the infinite energies of creation to provide you with food, water, clothing, and housing. As you can see, this program is closely tied in to the preservation of Mother Earth's ecosystem. Your rising consciousness has permitted Mother Earth to start her own shift into full consciousness. This shift is regulated by your own changes. This mutual transformation is what has allowed us even to contemplate the completion of our first contact mission with you, which is why we meticulously watch what happens every day on your world. You need to understand that there are specific developments and events that are to take place in a precise heaven-directed order. This divine program colors our approach to first contact. Bear in mind that we are preparing an entire planetary society for a huge leap into a full-blown galactic reality. You can see that this necessitates a unique set of circumstances and that orchestrating them is often not easy. In fact, at times it appears that we must formulate the impossible in order for the then possible to occur. As your world moves steadily toward a new reality, the chaos created by those with another goal in mind breeds yet more chaos. This anarchy can push you off center and bring you into contact with those fears and horrors driven into your subconscious by the core perceptions of the present reality. If and when these surface, we ask you to look them straight in the eye and accept, love, and transform them into a more positive and supportive aspect of your being. But know that this procedure can at times be rather unnerving. A core factor here to remember that you are to transform yourselves as well as your society. This also implies mutual help. Never forget that you are part of a grand collective of consciousness. This collective consists of yourselves, your fellows, and those marvelous helpmates supplied for you by heaven and the Galactic Federation. Concerning the Earth changes, expect these at times to regionally be quite intense, but be assured that Mother Earth has decided to hold back on changes of a global reach since your transformation is not very far off. These smaller changes include a prelude to the final migration of one of her poles to the Earth's core. Many prognosticators have confused the evidence of this operation with the pole shift. Again, be assured, these efforts are merely part of the preparations for her complete transformation. This most dramatic of moves is to be saved for the moment, when you are in a safe refuge and finishing off your final step into full consciousness. Until then, Mother Earth is to concentrate on those things that resolve the pressure on her tectonic plates and that build up the Pacific and Atlantic Ocean basins for the return of the continents of Lemuria and Atlantis. Finally, the rising of Atlantis and Lemuria is to balance the land-water ratio of Mother Earth. As a fully conscious planet, she is noted for her symmetry, as well as for her exquisite beauty. Her particular blending of land and water results in a stunning surface configuration. The deserts will go, inland seas will increase, which together with forests, lakes, and grasslands will produce a full palette of colours that you will weave into a glorious tapestry. The planet that is to emerge after the changes will be quite different, yet she will retain the overall shape of the continents you are used to. In addition, a two-layered firmament will give her a glow much like that of a halo when viewed from near interplanetary space. So soon an earth that is both familiar and excitingly novel will become your lovely new home. And that's it from Sheldon Nidle's message for this week. As usual, very informative and I think very uplifting. Sort of message you have to read, I think, at least a couple of times to really take in some of the most pertinent points. Now, to come back literally down to earth, I will move on to the general news and, of course, the conflict between Israel and Lebanon is high on the list of news items tonight, and I have nothing in writing, but I can quote you from what we learn in the UK from our evening news, because as I speak to you, it is 9:15 p.m. and we understand that the Hezbollah chief, and he speaks for an Islamic group, says that he has no faith in the international community. And he believes that Israel was waiting, as he calls it, to settle its scores with Lebanon. And he's pledged his people that there will be an open war. And I understand that today they fired 200 missiles into Israel. They talk of a gunship which is off their coast, and in the report they said it will soon go up in flames. And then in a later report, which quickly followed, there was a latest update on that, and they said it had been damaged by two rockets that clearly hadn't at that stage gone up in flames. The missiles fired back into Lebanon by Israel apparently destroyed a fuel depot, part of an airport, and they attacked most major roads and bridges. So that's it, an ugly affair, and we wonder where that will take us after what is currently happening in the Middle East. And there are all sorts of emergency meetings going on, so we wait to hear about that one. From the Crime Journal contributing writer Linda S. Hurd on July the 5th came a short article which was asking us whether anyone here hears Gaza's cries, and they said, or she said, how much longer must the Palestinian people be bombed, starved, humiliated and abused before the international community speaks up with one voice? How much longer will world leaders avert their eyes from the cruel way Israel is pursuing a land grab? How much longer will ordinary people prefer the World Cup and blissful ignorance to the facts of Israel's crimes and their effects on an entire people? The US and the EU have labelled the Hamas-led Palestinian Authority terrorists, a move that has virtually given the Israeli government carte blanche to do its worst. George W. Bush says Israel has the right to defend itself, even as it works to deliberately terrorise the civilian population. The proof of intent is Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert's instruction to the IDF last Sunday. That would be a week ago Sunday, of course. And he said, I don't want anyone to sleep tonight in Gaza. And the report goes on to say that almost 50% of Gaza's 1.5 million residents are without electricity at a time when temperatures are hitting the mid-30s C, which is in the 90s degrees Fahrenheit. And Israel saw fit to bomb a major power station in blatant contravention of the Geneva Conventions during an operation sadistically titled Operation Summer Rain. Experts say it may take up to 8 months to restore power, during which time hospital patients will die, families will be left without air conditioners, fans, refrigerators and televisions, office workers and students without essential computers. And the report says those of us who live in this region and who have experienced inevitable brief power outrages should ask ourselves whether we could survive months of unrelenting heat and dark without even the respite for cooling drink. There is worse to come. Fuel for generators is running out fast. Water supplies will dwindle and the sewage system will collapse when electrically powered pumps become inert. In short, there is a catastrophic humanitarian crisis in the making. Yet far from showing regret or remorse, Olmert on Sunday told his army to step up the action with whatever related horrors that will entail. And a horror it is, isn't it, indeed? So there we are, Israel, Lebanon, Israel, Palestine. We We wonder where it all leads. In a short article, or an extract from an article, from a source that isn't actually named, but it came out on the 9th of July, they were saying, thank goodness for the Swiss alone, because in Europe, other than the Italians, their government has dared to condemn what the Israelis are doing in Gaza. And it is collective punishment, it says. It violates the principle of proportionality. Israel has not taken the precautions required by international law to protect civilians. And then a more fuller article goes on to say, the EU's response, vague expressions of concern and calls for restraint. And the writer questions, couldn't Europe leaders show a tenth of the courage of Israel's brilliant columnist Gideon Levy? And he quotes, it is not legitimate to cut off 750,000 people from electricity. It is not legitimate to call on 20,000 people to run from their homes and turn their towns into ghost towns. It is not legitimate to kidnap half a government and quarter of a parliament. A state that takes such steps is no longer distinguishable from a terror organisation. And that was what Gideon Levy wrote this week in Haaretz. And the article goes on to say that European impotence in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is, of course, an ancient problem. The disease's latest aggravation began in January after Hamas' election victory. It was an event which was bound to have huge repercussions in Israel on every state's relations with the Palestinian Authority, on the future of political Islam throughout the Arab world, as well as on the West's image among Muslims. In short, it was a moment where the time-honoured diplomatic technique, the pause for reflection, was vital. There was no urgency, since Israel was already refusing to negotiate with President Mahmoud Abbas. Yet the EU promptly lined up with the US and Israel in demanding Hamas change its policies or be punished. The Quartet, a relatively recent body set up to coordinate policies between the US, the EU, Russia and the UN, became a trap acting as an arm of the US State Department for keeping other states in line. Its demands on Hamas were identical to Israel's. And the article concludes, as far as the extract I have here, some European diplomats now regret their haste. The decision to cut aid as well as contacts with the Palestinians is seen as a mistake, and last month's French initiative to find a mechanism for resuming aid to Gaza was the Quartet's first admission of error. So that's so much for what is currently happening in connection with the activities in and around Israel. I read of an item today, which I just noted in a general terms, and that is one that I'm certain will surface in the US. It's bound to crop up somewhere because of the nature of it. And it was regarding the firm Bayer, and it's talking of something I think that happened a few years ago, I haven't any dates, when they discovered they had blood which was infected with AIDS. And rather than destroy it, they got rid of it by selling it to people in the third world. And apparently the powers that be in the US, one is led to believe, turned a blind eye to that happening. So I think there's going to be a lot more come out on that one. That's the first thing I've seen of that particular article. Now, the Guildhall, Vermont, there on July the 11th, a Vermont District Court judge rejected a recent US Supreme Court ruling on the power of the police to search a private home, concluding that the state offers greater protections in such cases. And Judge Robert Bent said that under the state constitution, police must knock and announce themselves before conducting a search, even if they have a warrant, or face the prospect that any evidence they find could be thrown out. The Supreme Court said on June the 15th that evidence obtained without first knocking could be used at trial, but Bent said that that would not apply in Vermont. And he said, quote, evidence obtained in violation of the Vermont Constitution or as the result of a violation, cannot be admitted at trial as a matter of state law. And Bent wrote, citing an earlier state case, as president, introduction of such evidence at trials eviscerates our most sacred rights, impinges on individual privacy, perverts our judicial process and distorts any notion of fairness and encourages official misconduct. There are a brave stand there. From the World Socialist website, which is www.wsws.org, they were talking about the supposed plan to attack New York tunnels, and in this article by Barry Gray on the 8th of July, he is now suggesting that it was another dubious terror plot. And he quotes the headlines in the New York Daily News at the time, which proclaimed a tunnel bomb plot had been foiled. And apparently that afternoon, Federal Bureau of Investigation Assistant Director Mark Mershon, flanked by Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly, told a press conference that the FBI had disrupted a plan to carry out suicide bombings in the past train tunnels that carry hundreds of thousands of commuters between Manhattan and New Jersey. Now, the alleged mastermind, a 31-year-old resident of Beirut, Lebanon, named Assem Hamoud, was being held in Beirut and had, according to the FBI, confessed to participating in the plot and acting on the orders of Osama bin Laden. And there were a total of 8 suspects, 2 of whom were in custody at unnamed locations. None were Americans, and none had set foot on U.S. soil. Now, you know that. None were Americans, and none had set foot on U.S. soil. Mershon said, 6 foreign governments, which he did not name, were cooperating in the investigation. We believe, he declared, we intercepted the group in their early plotting, and, in fact, the plan has largely been disrupted. Now, the writer says just how early could be gleaned from his assertion that the plotting for this attack had matured to a point where it appeared that the individuals were about to move forward. They were about to go to a phase where they would attempt to surveil the targets, establish a regimen of attack, and acquire the resources necessary to effectuate the attack. And Mershon refused to answer questions on any other detail of the purported plot, other than to say the conspirators hope to carry out the attack in October or November of this year. Perhaps sensing scepticism even among the press, he added that this was the real deal. Barry Gray goes back to the whole thing and says how real a plot could be in which the conspirators had not scouted the supposed targets, had not attempted to raise funds or acquire explosives, and had not formulated a plan of action. Mershon failed to explain. Further information reported in press accounts and attributed to U.S. officials, quote, said, speaking on condition of anonymity, because the investigation is ongoing, made it clear that no real plot existed. And that's all I have on that particular article. There is more. Say that comes from World Socialist website. So there you are. I think I commented at the time when I first heard about that one that it may well be one of these more dubious plots. Anyway, that's all I propose to read from that one. In the Los Angeles Times, don't know the date, but it's very recent, Richard B. Schmidt, writing from Washington, was back on this matter of Valerie Plame. And you will know that she was a one-time CIA agent at the centre of a 3-year federal leak investigation. And she fought back, apparently, last Thursday, suing Vice President Dick Cheney, his former top aide, and presidential counsellor Karl Rove, accusing them of ruining her career and seeking revenge against her husband, an administration critic. Now, Valerie Plame and her husband, former Ambassador Joseph Wilson, alleged in a lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court that administration officials illegally conspired to violate their constitutional rights and other laws by leaking Plame's identity to reporters. The civil suit, filed almost 3 years to the day after syndicated columnist Robert Novak publicly identified Plane, seeks unspecified financial damages for what they describe as a gross invasion of privacy that could jeopardize the safety of their children and target Plane for retribution by enemies of the United States. They also claim the incident has impaired their professional opportunities. Plane retired from the CIA after her identity was revealed. The suit marks a new front in Washington's scandal that only a month ago seemed to have run its course after a federal prosecutor said he had decided not to bring charges against Roe, the focus of the three-year probe. In addition to Roe and Cheney, the suit names former Cheney aide Louis Scooter Libby, who faces trial early next year on charges of perjury and obstruction of justice in connection with the case. The lawsuit concerns the intentional and malicious exposure by senior officials of the federal government or one such human source at the CIA, Valerie Plame Wilson, whose job it was to gather intelligence to make the nation safer, who risked her life for her country. So that's it. So that one's still around and it's still surfacing, and it appears it's gradually getting somewhere. Now, last week I had sight of a suggestion that there had been some kind of shootout, literally a shootout, at a meeting which was being chaired by President Clinton, and one of the members there, Colin Powell, was injured. Now, you would in that event expect that to be kept secret and for a cover story to come out. And lo and behold, this week, from Aspen, Colorado, from the Associated Press, we have a report that former Secretary of State Colin Powell was briefly hospitalized early Friday, and that would have been a week ago today, after he fell ill at a restaurant where he was dining with former President Clinton and others, police said. Aspen Police Sergeant Bill Lynn said the four-star general told him it appeared to be a combination of altitude sickness and something he ate. He is conscious and in very good spirits, Lynn said, shortly before Powell was released from Aspen Valley Hospital at 1:45 a.m. Lynn said Powell asked him to speak with reporters. Powell's Alexandria, Virginia-based secretary, Peggy Cifrino, did not immediately return a phone call left at her office. A nursing supervisor at the hospital where former Enron CEO Kenneth Lay was rushed to and pronounced dead early Wednesday refused to comment. Powell, 69, was in Colorado for the Aspen Ideas Festival, a conference in its second year that invites some of the world's leading thinkers. The former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and chief strategist of the 1991 Persian Gulf War against Iraq served as President Bush's Secretary of State from 2001 until January 2005. So there we are. That's all there is to the report. But I noticed that he wouldn't speak with reporters, and he evidently got other people to handle any inquiries. And it does make you wonder, if he wouldn't appear in the flesh, would it have been apparent that he had been to hospital for more than what he stated? Because I'm sure, just from memory, the other report mentioned that he had been sufficiently injured to need hospital attention. There we are. All the intrigue of what is going on here. Now, apparently last week the Supreme Court ruled in Hamdan versus Rumsfeld that Congress never authorized the Bush administration to ignore existing laws and treaties in pursuing those responsible for the 9/11 attacks. And that means Bush's defiance of those laws and treaties is illegal. So he and his top officials could be charged with war crimes and impeached. And this report came off the Democrats.com website. And there's an added small extract from another website, which is impeachpac.org, and it reads that despite opposition from Beltway insiders, the grassroots impeachment movement continues to grow, with Fairfax CA becoming the latest town to join the impeachment wagon. So there we are, there's something else that's closing in on the perpetrators of the 9/11 Act. Returning to the same case, there's yet another report, I guess from another source, although I don't have the details, saying that many are howling. Last week's Supreme Court 5-3 ruling in the case Hansen versus Rumsfeld. And it says that detainees now have a right to at least the minimum protections guaranteed in the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And they say it was a 5-3 ruling, it could have been a 5-4, but Chief Justice John Roberts was rescued for having ruled for the government in an earlier hearing along these same lines. The Supreme Court ruled that the military commissions or tribunals were unauthorised by federal and international law, and it upheld the idea that Geneva Conventions apply to all detainees. And this ruling succeeds in making the United States appear to be more like a republic instead of a military empire led by tin pot trollops of the Bush-Cheney and Rumsfeld variety. Now, I didn't say that. It came from this report. But it's interesting that in spite of what George Bush has said, that he's granted himself laws to override these conventions, legally, they say they are still applicable. So all these things, I think, are heading towards a situation that will be his undoing. Now, posted on the 9th of July in the WorldNetDaily.com site, it's an article from Washington by Joseph Farah, and he's talking about secret meetings being held between the corporate and political elites of the US, Mexico and Canada to push North America into a European Union-style merger. He questions that, in fact. He says, is President Bush's reluctance to control the border and enforce laws requiring deportation of foreigners who enter the country illegally part of a master plan to all but eliminate borders between the US, Canada and Mexico? Does the agenda of the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America include a common currency that would scrap the dollar in favour of what some are calling the Amero? I suppose that's a play on the Euro of Europe. It may be the biggest story of the 21st century, but few press outlets are telling it. In fact, until very recently, few in the US were aware of the plans, and even fewer denouncing what appears to be the implementation of an effort some have characterised as NAFTA on steroids. But opposition is mounting. Perhaps the most blistering criticism has come from Lou Dobbs of CNN, the frequent critic of Bush's immigration policies, and he says, a regional prosperity and security program, he asks rhetorically in a recent cablecast, quote, this is an absolute ignorance, and the fact that we reported this, we should point out when it was signed, but as we watch this thing progress, these working groups are continuing, they're intensifying. What in the world are these people thinking about? You know, I was asked the other day about whether or not I really thought the American people had the stomach to stand up and stop this nonsense. This direction from a group of elites, an absolute contravention of our law, of our constitution, every national value. And I hope, I pray that I'm right when I said yes, but this is beyond belief. What has Dobbs and a few other vocal critics began in earnest 31st of March 2005, when the elected leaders of the US, Mexico and Canada agreed to advance the agenda of the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America. There we are. So there's something else that's causing a little bit of distress amongst people. From the website mujca.com, I have a little report here which refers to a debate which was actually due to occur yesterday, and it reads that Dr. Kevin Barrett, UW Madison lecturer, who has received overwhelming public support along with a dash of vitriol for expressing his views about 9/11 on a radio program, has challenged Rep. Steve Nass to debate him on the subject. It is time, he said, to stop the name-calling and threats and get down to a serious scholarly debate. And Barrett said, if Republican now successfully refused my arguments, I promised to withdraw them and issue a public apology to Vice President Cheney and others I have named as 9/11 suspects. And NASA stated that Kevin Barrett has been unable to provide any scholarly basis for his conspiracy theory on 9/11, or even a minimal level of evidence that might circumstantially support his views. In fact, Barrett is the author of a scholarly essay to be published in September in a book he co-edited alongside fellow academics John Cobb and Sandra Lubowski that includes a wealth of citations to scholarly articles and other evidence that supports his view. Cobb, whose views of 9/11 are not far from Barrett's, is regarded by many as America's leading Christian theologian, and Lubowski is a respected Jewish studies professor. Barrett is also a member of Scholars for 9/11 Truth and the Society for Physical Investigation of 9/11, or SPINE. Both groups have posted at their websites many scholarly articles that support Barrett's views together. The two groups include many dozens of professors affiliated with dozens of universities and colleges, none of which has ever considered firing or disciplining any one of them for their 9/11 revisionist views. So thank goodness for that. Things are happening. Now, from a site which is for Dr. Turi, and the site is drturi.com. Dr. Turi, it is quoted, was a first-hour guest on a program where he set his latest predictions for July and August 2006. And there's a couple here that I read, because I haven't got any more in actual fact. These appear to be the most important ones. And he's talking of July the 23rd. Which isn't far away, and he sees hurricanes, tornadoes, and thousands of people forced to relocate. August the 1st, he talks of police and terrorism, dramatic news, and for August the 9th, explosions, earthquakes, and nuke news. And for August the 19th, hurricane, tornadoes, and thousands of people forced to locate. Not very happy stuff, is it? But in light of what's happening, you do wonder if the current troubles in the Middle East have anything to do with nuke use from August the 1st. It said, Dr. Turi also expressed concern over the safety of the shuttle astronauts on their current mission and said they could be in serious trouble. So I've never heard of Dr. Turi, so I have no idea whether his predictions have proved to be somewhat reliable, but there you are. Finally, we have again the 9/11 Families Group, and a representative of that told a radio host that the 9/11 Commission was a sham and a cover-up beyond belief. And this comes from a very popular website for good general underground news called PrisonPlanet.com. And it just reads, there's not much to it, the representative of the largest group of 9/11 family says that the official version of events is a fallacy and that the NORAD stand down and evidence of incendiary devices used to bring down the towers amount to government complicity in the attacks, a conclusion shared by half of the 9/11 families he represents. So there we are. I thought I'd mention that because there is another group that's still pushing to get the truth out in connection with 9/11. Now, I finished the general news there. I'm still rummaging through my old flying saucer reviews so that I come to my flying saucer spot. And I have a report here that comes from a magazine issued in July-August 1968. And it was regarding an incident on the 31st of October 1967. It's not a very long report, so I'll read most of it out. And apparently, brilliant beams of white light directed towards the ground have been reported from many parts of the globe. But from Australia comes an amazing story of a man who not only had his car stopped by a beam of light, but also found himself looking up and into it as if into a gleaming tube. Now, the witness of this curious happening, a Mr. Spargo, is an employer of a large labour force, and as he did not wish to attract ridicule, his name was not given in reports published in Australia. Now, Mr. Spargo was interviewed and closely questioned about his strange experiences by Dr. Paul Seck, who happened to be a psychiatrist who came from Perth. And both Mr. Spargo and Dr. Seck are stated by the Flying Saucer Review correspondent were to be men of high integrity. Now, Mr. Spargo is married with three children, and he's a wool class and shearing contractor. And one day, at the end of October 1967, he paid off a team of men at Codgernup in Western Australia, got into his car, and set off for Boyart Brook to see another team of men. And he was speeding along a quiet stretch of road at about 9 p.m. on a clear starlight night, some 12 miles from Boyart Brook. And he suddenly had a shock. His car stopped, and all the electrical systems, including lights and radio, went dead. The astonishing thing about this transition from driving at 65 miles per hour and finding himself at a sudden standstill is that Mr. Spargo had no sense of deceleration. And he said, quote, "If you suddenly stop a car that's doing over 60, it's like getting shot out of a slingshot. But I found I wasn't moving, yet had no sense of having stopped. All I knew was that I was the focus of a brilliant beam of light." Now, Mr. Spargo has stopped in undulating countryside, scattered with trees 60 to 70 foot high. He was aware that the beam focused on him came from a mushroom-shaped craft, 30 feet or more in diameter, hovering above the treetops at an estimated 100 feet from the ground. And he said, quote, "I could make out the shape of the ship, and it was glowing with an iridescent light. I'd say the colour of bluish lightning best describes it. The tube came out of the bottom of the ship at an angle of about 45 degrees to him." Asked how close to him the tube came, Mr. Spargo replied, "I seemed to be surrounded by it. It was 2 to 3 foot in diameter and brilliant on the outside, yet I could see up it, and there was no glare or anything inside the tube. It didn't bother my eyes at all, and I got the impression that it was lighting up the inside of the car, but I didn't look round to see. I had the most extraordinary feeling that I was being observed through the tube. I couldn't see anyone, I could just make out the shape of the glowing craft. I felt compelled to look up the tube, but I didn't feel any fear, and I don't remember thinking of anything in particular. I just sat and looked up that tube with light. After about 5 minutes, it was switched off, just like someone switching off an ordinary electric light. The colour of the craft seemed to darken, then it accelerated very quickly and disappeared towards the west at a terrific speed. It was gone within a second or two." There was another surprise in store for Mr. Spargo. He found himself once more speeding along the road. He had no recollection of starting up the car any more than he could remember stopping it for a few minutes earlier. Now he made up his mind to stop, drew to the side of the road, got out of his car and looked around. His only feeling was one of curiosity. He was quite without fear. There was nothing to be seen in the starry sky. So he decided to report the incident to a local constable. And he said, "I felt the authorities ought to know about it right away, but I asked them to keep my name out of it." Asked whether he was aware of any noises about him while the car was stopped, Mr. Spargo said he had not heard a sound. And on reflection, he found this rather strange. He said, "You hear frogs, crickets, and all sorts of sounds if you stop in the bush at night." And asked if he could hear his own heartbeats. Mr. Spargo said no. And he estimated that the whole episode must have lasted about 5 minutes. And he wears an Omega chronometer watch, which is very reliable and keeps excellent time. But when he checked the time on arrival at Boyart Brook, he found it unaccountably 5 minutes slow. It seemed likely that the watch had stopped when the car stopped. Keeping his identity quiet, Mr. Spargo then later spoke to other people who'd learned of this incident. And he spoke to a garage owner he knew, and he replied, "My son saw it too. He was out working for a farmer that night." And the garage owner said that the two local farmers in the Murradup district had also seen the object, and another young farmer and a wool classer had seen an object in the sky. They watched it for a while but thought it was a satellite. And he said these strange sightings were about the same time that Mr. Spargo had his strange experience. So there we are. I like to try and pick out the ones that, just to my knowledge, are a wee bit different. And what is different there is instead of a beam that perhaps picked him up and took him into the craft, it was a beam that seemed to be, if you like, picking his brains or whatever they were doing. Right, now I come to what I call my other messages, which are generally speaking of a spiritual content. But I will start with another item off the website of Dr. Turi. Website, drturi.com. Now, he was talking of an astrophysicist, Dr. Bernard Haich. And this is very important, and I don't think it's necessarily the first time something like this has been said, but he presented his views, which offer the bridge between science and spirituality, arguing that the universe was brought about by an infinite intelligence. He believes this intelligence's purpose is to experience and enrich itself through its various aspects and life forms. Further, we are not disconnected from this intelligence, but a part of it. Now that indeed is very interesting, because what I call the top drawer spiritual messages say exactly that. And this short extract goes on to say that the ideas of this intelligence become laws of a given universe, and then these laws take over, setting up certain parameters. Haich explained, adding that other universes might be bound by different factors besides space and time. And he also discussed his study of the zero-point field, a residual amount of quantum electromagnetic energy that exists everywhere in the universe. Some esoteric spiritual theories regarding the creation of mass can be speculatively connected to this, he noted. So, there's a guy who's obviously worth reading to find out his views. So I'll just mention that his name again is Dr. Bernard Haich, spelled H-A-I-S-C-H. And you can find that on the drturi.com website. Now, facts like that are interesting, and I've got another one here that talks of critical mass. And it says, and if you've ever wondered what critical mass is, here is evidently the answer. It is 51% of the energy, vibration, and consciousness of whatever it is we're talking about. When 51% of an electron is vibrating at a higher frequency, the remaining 49% is instantly absorbed into the new vibration. So how does this facet of quantum physics affect the violet flame and our ability to transform our lives? So now we know how this little bit of knowledge was given. And I'll complete it by saying that the answer was that when we use the violet flame, the same laws of quantum physics apply. If we want to transmute poverty consciousness, for instance, we invoke the violet flame and ask that every electron of poverty consciousness we have ever experienced be transmuted back into its divine potential, which is the limitless abundance of God. The moment 51% of our energy, vibration, and consciousness is resonating with frequency of God's limitless abundance instead of poverty, lack, and limitation, we will have reached a critical mass of prosperity consciousness. When that occurs, nothing can stop abundance from manifesting in our lives. So interesting, that. Something you can obviously do yourself. And talking of doing things yourself, there was an article talking of protecting yourself by wrapping yourself in white light. Comes from Holland, from the website HTTP. Semicolon, two right-hand slashes, home.iae.nl. And it reads, talking about awareness, indicating that it's helpful to everyone, wherever they live, that they wrap their home, that is, cover their home with white light spheres, visualizing the light going above the home and into the ground below the house from all directions, and spin these circles so that they create three spheres. And they say, spin each circle to create three spheres from each direction. In other words, height, width, and length in a clockwise direction. So that there are nine layers of white light around your home, or any object, whatever you want to protect. And this will give your home great protection for long periods of time. Every so often, you may reinforce these spheres, either by repeating the action, or at least by remembering that they are there. The remembrance of their presence reinforces them. Now, I just wanted to carry on a wee bit further with that and say that this awareness indicates so that entities can understand the potential value of the white light. This awareness indicates it is not so much what it does to your home, it is what it does to your subconsciousness that is effective. Your subconscious mind creating these images of your home being shielded by these nine layers of white light is a sphere surrounding your home, causing the subconscious to recognize as reality the presence of these lights. The subconscious does not know the difference between that which occurs in the imagination and that which occurs in reality, and therefore, on a subconscious level, these spheres are real. They are nine layers deep and protect your home from anything negative that may approach. And they just go on to say you can apply it to your car, wrap your car in white light to prevent danger from accidents in this way. And you could also wrap your own body in the bodies of your family, also in the white light. And they say it's also good to teach your children and other members of the family to use the white light wrapping techniques, creating these nine spheres of light as protection for yourself. I've missed out a little bit of the article, so I don't want to spend too long on it, because it then goes on to say, this is my final comment on this one, this awareness suggests you may think of these terms of shields in Star Trek, the second generation, wherein they have shields to protect their ship. For these shields that are mentally placed around yourself, protect yourself from the invisible dark forces that may be projected towards you from angry people or people who would simply harm you for no reason at all. This awareness indicates that lying down, entities can visualize much better than when standing up. That the conscious mind becomes more scientific, mathematical, and more conceptual and rational when standing, and more imaginative, spontaneous, and relaxed and visionary when lying down. This awareness suggests also that the head to the north, when lying down, can be of help. Another interesting article there, suggesting how you can move, move protection around your house or anything else, if it is so needed. Now, an interesting one across my path, a message from Commander Ashtar of the Galactic Fleet through Jess on the 7th of July, was under the heading of "We are designated to achieve the proper results by the end of July." And it's evidently an extract from an article, but it reads, "Heaven will allow us to intervene if need be. This must be accomplished. The dates you have seen and have surmised are working to our end. We are designated to achieve the proper results by the end of July. This is determined by the Council of Overton, which is above and beyond the power of your Galactic Federation. This ruling force in the whole super universe is not normally so involved in the affairs of individual galaxies such as Nebadon Crescent. Nebadon itself is a minor consideration in the scheme of things for them, yet they have paid attention and charted a course it must follow to serve the best interests of the super universe of Orvonton. You have no concept of the immensity of this decision nor the force that goes behind it. We in the Ashtar Command are bound by this decision. It will happen when it must. Christ Michael, as you call him, is bound to this time scale just as much as we are, but he is waiting until the latest possible moment to implement the inevitable. He is loving action and is concerned that as many as humanly possible will be able to move with us into a new dimension with Gaia." The names of Nebadon for this galaxy and other names might be unfamiliar to you, but I always think, well, what's in the name? We can't know everything. Now, for the last couple of weeks, I have read extracts from an article by Mark Stern, which came out on the 4th of June, called Earth Ascension, and this is the last part of it. Excellent article. Comes off a personal website called freewebs.com. And the last part of this article says, and this will in fact conclude my program for the evening, that due to the contacts of all light servers, the flow of the ascension process is altering all the time. As more hearts awake and the process accelerates, there is less issue of the mass consciousness holding us back to the heavy celestial activity between both Earths and the unfolding of the higher dimensions through the two Earths. The colours and tones of the new Earth are striking in their beauty. When we have fully awakened and ascended, we know that these colours and tones are actually us, being us radiating everything into synchronicity. The difference is that our full perception of these colours and sound makes for the peak experiences that light servers are having more of now at this time. Being on the new Earth is a constant peak experience. It's what we intuitively work towards, and our heart knows what a peak experience does to our soul essence when it expands upon touching the higher value vibrations. We are fired up at a very deep level whenever we experience the celestial spheres, because we directly experience high extensions of everything that we are. We get that glimpse of everything we are, and I know for myself that I have never been the same. The story is heightening all the time now. The plot is thickening. The intrigue is to sustain us. What more can be said? We're doing at our level best in contributing to such a magnificent process, and we all do it so well. Channels also now experience an ease in their flow. There is less having to reach out for the information that Spirit presents. The information is simply there and is so easily accessible because we have raised our vibrations sufficiently. The new Earth is really an expanded extension of our present Earth with all the bounty that our dreams have depicted all of our lives. To be living from a new Earth is really the reality that we as light servers are proving is more than a destiny or a dream. It is the unfolding truth. Amen and Adonai. And that is time for me to leave. I would thank you for being with me, and I hope you'll be with me next week. God bless you all.
Service.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.